thank you for tuning in to the Diplomats Japan Affairs podcast. My name is Jeff, and I'm joined by our new editorial assistant in Tokyo, Zach.
Nice to meet everybody. Thanks for joining us.
So last week marked the 3-year anniversary of the 2011 Tohoku earthquake and tsunami. And the natural disaster has turned into a nuclear one now, as the crippled Fukushima Daiichi power plant faces a very long cleanup process. And as if the thought of radiation leaks and contamination weren't scary enough, a recent report from the New York Times painted a very dark portrait of the desperate and unskilled manual laborers that have been tasked with on-the-ground cleanup efforts. The situation is, it's just so bad that staffing agencies are actually turning to the nation's homeless. One is even using the slogan, out of work, nowhere to live, nowhere to go, nothing to eat, come to Fukushima. And TEPCO, the plant's operator, is really trying to distance itself from the whole situation, so they're relying more and more on contract workers coming from sometimes shady dispatch agencies. There are even accusations of Yakuza involvement in some of them. And one lawyer described the Fukushima recruitment process as a free-for-all. Do you think that such a serious task is it okay to leave it with these downtrodden individuals?
Well, really, I think it's really not. I mean, after reading this article in the New York Times, it was just heartbreaking, you know. And I think even more than just the human effects, I think it's the structural organization of how TEPCO is handling the issue, or their lack of handling the issue, rather, was just shocking. I think that in the article, some of the workers mentioned the lack of TEPCO management on site. And because TEPCO has been utilizing this system of, this layered system of subcontractor on top of subcontractor, there's sometimes 5 or 6 levels of separation between a worker and the actual TEPCO management. So I think it really explains why they're having so many issues when we read about these fuel leaks last year, for example, when they're rechanging the rods or the hoses on the fuel, the storage tanks. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not only the organizational problems, but it's the human factor. I think people were complaining about their pay was being skimmed off the top by their labor recruiters. And there's issues with alcoholism and depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. And I think it's not just a cleanup problem, but it's also a human problem.
Yeah, so going back to that leak that you mentioned, the New York Times piece stated that those workers were given only 20 minutes of training before they were sent into the front lines. These people are painted as kind of the dregs of society, but I don't know that anyone could receive 20 minutes of training and go in and do that task. So a lot of times, you know, people criticize these workers that are undertrained and underpaid, but I think the fact of the matter is no one wants to do this job. So who else are they going to rely on? They're not going to find people with PhDs that want to go out there and you know, move hoses and dig up contaminated soil.
Right. So it's an unfortunate consequence that they tend to be drawing on the people who are in kind of the lower position of society, right? I mean, they were recruiting people from homeless districts in Osaka and Tokyo, and you know, now they're going to these desperate sounding online ads talking about, you know, just out of work, come to Fukushima.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, there have also been reports for years now about Japan's elderly volunteering to replace workers at the Fukushima plant. You know, these young guys are really scared of radiation, so the elderly people are kind of sacrificing themselves for the greater good. It's so sad that still 3 years later, there's no good news. I'm just waiting for that day that we can have this chat about, you know, progress being made. And
yeah.
And I think it may take something much larger than these contract organizations to handle such a big cleanup effort.
Sure. Yeah. The deregulation of the work from TEPCO seems to be one of the major reasons for all the problems they've been having. So if they can start to re-centralize authority in someone that knows what they're actually doing instead of these third-party contractors who are really just caring about profits, basically, and they don't really have the technical expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It also makes me wish that, you know, Japan's famous for its technology sector. It really makes me wish that the robotics industry was, you know, 10 or 20 years ahead of itself.
Speaking of technology, moving on to the technology giant Sony in Japan and the issues they've been facing. You know, they've been losing profit margins, and they've been facing strict competition from the Korean electronics manufacturers, but it seems like now they're trying to shift their strategy somewhat.
Yeah, they recently shut down their VAIO PC business. They sold that one off, and you know, there have been reports that Sony's winning the next-gen console war with their PlayStation 4. It's selling much better than the Xbox One, which is made by Microsoft. But when it comes to consoles, the unfortunate truth is that they're more of a vehicle for selling software. The Xbox One is $100 more expensive than the PlayStation 4 right now. So it's going to turn into a pricing war. And after the first or second round of cuts, they're probably going to be selling these consoles at a loss. It sounds good that they're winning the console war, but in the end, it doesn't really mean much for their profit margins.
Right. It seems like they have so many other issues in terms of their overall corporate organization. What kind of a company is Sony today? Is it an entertainment company? Is it an electronics manufacturer? Is it a holding company? You know, they have so many different arms to their business. It seems like they've had a little bit of a loss of their of who they are. But what are they trying to achieve as a company? The recent moves into like mobile technology and shifting away from TV manufacturing and putting more emphasis on their gaming consoles. I wonder if these will be successful in you know recreating a new robust Sony or if it's just it's too little too late. I wonder.
Well, they've really been pushing their Xperia cell phones and tablets. Docomo, Japan's leading wireless carrier, they have used the Xperia flagship smartphones in their advertising campaigns. They're on the billboards, Watanabe Ken's holding one, you know. They've been featuring them prominently. But the thing is, when I'm riding on the subway and I look to my left and my right, everyone's using an iPhone or maybe a Samsung, you know, Galaxy smartphone. I see very few people using the Xperia, even though it's kind of marketed as the Japanese phone, you know, made by a Japanese company for Japanese people.
Sure. So I wonder if is it a branding issue? I mean, Apple seems to be so successful selling its image of an Apple lifestyle. It's almost like it's consumerism at its finest. Yeah. You know, if you're an Apple purchaser, then you subscribe to a certain set of values and a certain way you carry yourself. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if Sony isn't winning that image war, that kind of, you know, compared with Apple.
Yeah, that's got to be the root of the problem because they always get great reviews. And the Xperia line kind of pioneered the whole waterproof, dustproof casings. And the latest Xperia Z2 tablet is actually thinner and lighter than the new iPad Air. So I think the design is working, the hardware is working, but they're just not getting it out to the masses.
Yep, it seems it's almost like a communication problem. Mm-hmm. Speaking of communication, so I was just reading, it seems like Tokyo is already starting to think about the preparation for the 2020 Olympics. So one of the things that they were talking about, there was a gathering or a collection of business agencies, government agencies, tourism, airports, shopping centers, that all came together to talk about the issue of the lack of foreign language information in Japan. And they were primarily focusing on signage. So they were really focused on three groups in terms of in the public transportation, in terms of tourism and sightseeing, and also in terms of street signs. But, you know, I wonder, I don't know if signage is really the issue or it's a lack of, it's a human communication problem, a linguistics problem, the lack of English speakers. What do you think, Jeff?
One thing I want to note is that they're not just focusing on Tokyo. This public-private council that's been formed to promote the multilingual signage and pictographic signage, it includes Nagano, Yamanashi, and Shizuoka prefectures, as well as the cities of Yokohama, Kawasaki, and Saitama. So this is pretty central to the greater Tokyo metropolitan area. I don't really see an issue with signs around here, but when you get further away from the city limits, you might encounter problems with communication face-to-face with another human being.
Sure.
So, one example, when I lived up in Hokkaido, I lived about 6 hours northeast of Sapporo, in the absolute middle of nowhere, and I had to drive everywhere that I went, so getting around wasn't a problem, but if there wasn't a sign, I would have to stop at a, you know, convenience store or whatever and ask for directions. And at that time, you know, I had basic working Japanese, and it was, even though I was asking the correct question, it was just lost in translation because they couldn't fathom interacting with a foreigner who was speaking their language with an accent. So, yeah, as you said, I think it's... I at least hope that this initiative will translate into getting the Japanese populace more interested in English. You know, maybe they'll pick up Rosetta Stone or a phrase book. And I think that business owners especially, they are going to benefit big time if they can provide, you know, English menus at a restaurant, for example, or retail staff that can assist customers in English. So it'll be very economically viable for people who concentrate on English.
Sure. You know, at a certain point, there's a limit to how much science can do. I almost have imagined like a nightmarish scenario of everything that you could ever want to ask is published on a sign, and it would just be overwhelming. I mean, it's like, I totally agree with you. I think if people could learn some, at least, you know, basic communication or daily communication skills for common questions, it could be, it's for mutual benefit. It would help the people, the local stores in Tokyo and the Kanto area as a whole. And also, of course, it would be very helpful and useful for tourists coming in visiting for the Olympics. So we'll see if it actually happens. That's to be seen.
Thank you for listening to this week's Japan Affairs podcast. And please join us again next week when we discuss more news and analysis from Japan.